Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Stacy is out today and tomorrow. She is celebrating a wedding with friends, so Curtis and I are holding it down for you. We got Brady behind the glass running the board and helping us produce the show, so we're having a great old time. Now, we came across some sound from Lewis Riddick of ESPN that had us thinking, look, and we're talking about Drew Locke and Geno Smith. They are the ones that are on the roster right now, but are we having the wrong conversation right now? Should it be more about Baker Mayfield versus Jimmy Garoppolo? Curtis, help us make some sense out of this. Why would we be talking about Baker Mayfield versus Jimmy Garoppolo?
Well, I would think the only reason we'd be talking about those guys in this same breath that we do with Drew Locke and we do with Geno Smith is that if either one of them were to become available, the Seahawks would have their choice of Garoppolo or of Baker Mayfield. Now, all four of those quarterbacks come with inherent risks. All four of them come with ways that the Seahawks could absolutely use them. But let's look at Jimmy G and Baker Mayfield rather than Drew Locke and Geno Smith for the sake of this experiment. Because, look, it's sports talk radio. We got to talk about the hypotheticals. We got to talk about all options available, because if we don't, we're not doing our job. So, in the context of this exercise, Baker Mayfield against Jimmy Garoppolo, I mean, just at face value, I think the obvious answer is Baker Mayfield, but is it that obvious, really, when you look at it? Because Jimmy Garoppolo is a quarterback that doesn't really turn over the football. He has helped guide a 49ers team that has had an incredible roster around him. They've made it to a Super Bowl. They made it to another NFC Championship game this last year. Is it obvious that Baker Mayfield is better than Jimmy G, or is there something to Jimmy G potentially being of interest to the Seahawks if he does become a free agent?
Well, I do believe so. I mean, absolutely. I mean, let's go to cut number five, Lewis Riddick from ESPN. He talks about look, if the 49ers are heading in this direction of cutting Jimmy Garoppolo, then Heath believes that the Seahawks should be all over it.
The 49ers are not going to trade Jimmy Garoppolo to the Seattle Seahawks in the division. But when they cut him, and it sounds like they will cut him eventually, I would be all over that. All over it if I'm the Seattle Seahawks. Why? Look, think about this. Shane Waldron, who's their offensive coordinator out there in Seattle, comes from the Sean McVay trees, coach in L.A. with Sean. That offense is very similar in terms of construct, in terms of philosophy that Kyle Shanahan runs out in San Francisco. That's an offense that's tailor-made for Jimmy G's style.
So you have that. Now let's go to cut number six. And Lewis Riddick says Jimmy Garoppolo, he believes, is the missing piece for this Seahawks offense.
He can throw as pretty of a pass as anyone in the NFL. And with some of the weapons that they have out there, when you think of Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, Noah Fant, two good running backs, just drafted two bookend offensive tackles, building up the defense, Jimmy G is like the piece that they're missing. Seattle's setting the table for some quarterback in the next year or two, if it's not Drew Locke or Geno Smith, which it ain't going to be. If it's not one of those two, someone's going to inherit a football team that has quietly set themselves up.
So I don't believe that Lewis Riddick – Lewis Riddick, I get the hype train, I get all this, but, I mean, Jimmy G being the missing piece for this offense, I don't know about that, man. I don't know. I do believe that it would be a welcomed addition for this offense, but I don't necessarily buy into the idea that Jimmy G makes this team a playoff contender. And, Curtis, before we dive into this, I want to go to cut seven here real quick. This is Tim Hasselbeck 2 weeks ago. Now, remember, Tim Hasselbeck was all over the Russell Wilson situation in regards to how Seattle was going to handle it. 2 weeks ago, Tim Hasselbeck, cut seven, said Baker Mayfield, he's going to be a Seahawk very, very soon.
It's the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, and the reality is I've kind of felt like all along the path for Baker to get to Seattle is to get released, to end up in Seattle. And then in Seattle, you know, you're in an environment with Pete Carroll in his mantra of compete every day. And that type of you know, scenario is really the best for Baker to go somewhere where, you know, you're not just a backup, you're not in a situation where the path to play is impossible. But then also for the team, you know, you're creating some competition in an area where there's a need for competition because Drew Lock has not proved himself as a starter. And so it creates that environment.
So, Curtis, with that being said, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo, Baker Mayfield, you have the chance to choose between those two guys on the open market if they do get cut by their respective teams. Who you taking?
If I'm Pete Carroll and we're going with an even clean, or we're going for a clean health sheet with these two guys, I think it's obvious it would be Jimmy Garoppolo. I think that's who Pete Carroll would take if both these guys were at full strength. If both these guys, you know, had everything at their disposal right now. But the problem with Jimmy Garoppolo is that shoulder injury and the fact that he waited later on in the offseason to address it, and he's still rehabbing it here in June. He was an excused absence from 49ers minicamp because of that shoulder injury. Now, Baker Mayfield also dinged up this season, but his injury was on his non-throwing shoulder. That was on his left shoulder. So I would imagine Baker is going to be much closer to full health or much closer to full effectiveness than Jimmy Garoppolo will be the closer we get to training camp and the closer we get to week one of the preseason, week one of the regular season. So because of that, I think the best option in 2022 for the Seahawks would be to go Baker Mayfield. But I'm not the one calling the shots. It's Pete Carroll, and we know how much Pete Carroll emphasizes do not turn the ball over, protect the ball. It's all about the ball. Jimmy Garoppolo is really good about not turning the ball over. This is a guy who's career high in interceptions. Yeah, he's only played two seasons where he started at least 15 games, but in those two seasons, the most interceptions he's had is 13. His completion percentage for his career is 67.7%. This is a guy who is accurate when not asked to do a lot and also doesn't turn the ball over at a high clip. Those are two things that Pete Carroll absolutely loves, whereas Baker Mayfield can get a little reckless with it. We saw him have a season with, I think, 21 interceptions during his time in Cleveland. So I think if Jimmy Garoppolo were at full health, it would be a no-doubt slam dunk that he ends up in Seattle. But he's not. And I think that's why Baker Mayfield, to me, is the better option of the two.
Yeah, I believe that when you're looking at Jimmy Garoppolo, I understand the history and obviously the style of play that would fit well with this offense. But Curtis, I'm going to disagree with you. I believe that Baker Mayfield would be the better option of the two, and for this reason alone. I believe that Baker Mayfield has the ability to throw the ball at every single level of the field, whereas Jimmy Garoppolo is very limited in what he is able to do as a passer. Now, he is somebody that is very heavy in terms of his targets. You talk about, hot maps and things like that in terms of completions or throws and where they are on the field. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be short to intermediate in between the numbers and hashes, and he is going to be in that realm of the field, and that's where he does his most damage. He does not take advantage of the outside areas of the numbers and down the field, which is what I believe Pete Carroll is looking for in regards to this offense. Play action, run heavy offense that can take the ball deep down the field with two legitimate deep threats in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Jimmy Garoppolo has not been known for his ability to stretch the field with his arm and to be able to extend it downfield. Now, I believe that there's volatility in both players, and so if you were to ask me who is the safer choice, I would probably say Jimmy Garoppolo, Curtis, to your point, that he has been there, he's done that, he has had, you know, legitimate playoff experience, whereas Baker Mayfield, I mean, you just don't know what version of the kid you're going to get, but I believe that Baker Mayfield has the most upside and has the ability to really take this offense to, you know, its intended version of itself because of the arm talent and the ability to, you know, move the ball downfield, which is much more of the style of Pete Carroll. He's never wanted to. I mean, I'll never forget, you know, he talked about it with Brock and Salk years ago in training camp and said, we don't want to be a dink and dunk offense. And I don't believe that mentality has changed under Pete Carroll. And with Jimmy Garoppolo, Curtis, you would then have to become a dink and dunk offense.
You would. But boy, I mean, I can't get over the fact that in the 2020 season, the Seahawks took their chances early on in the season, and it worked for the most part. I would say it worked up until that Arizona Cardinals game on Sunday Night Football, and then all of a sudden the ball was getting turned over a lot more, and we saw Pete Carroll get a little more gun-shy, taking less shots down the field, emphasizing protecting the ball. What do you think is the bigger emphasis with Pete Carroll's offense? Is it maximizing those shots down the field, or is it maintaining possession of the football?
Well, it should be maintaining possession of the football. But in part of this offense, Curtis, you have to be able to stretch the field. You have to be able to keep defenses on their heels and not be able to completely tee off on the run game. And if you're, you know, like someone like the 49ers who were able to be very successful, with Kyle Shanahan as their play caller, I think that he's been very unique and very, dynamic in the way that he has been able to make a very limited volume of the playbook work for the 49ers. Mike McDaniel also being a part of that offense as well. The problem is that now what you can do as a defense is you can be more aggressive. You don't have to worry about getting beat over the top downfield. You can get yourself to a certain mark and know that you can drive on routes in front of you. You can play more aggressively to the run game because you do not have a quarterback that can offset that and challenge you downfield if you're Jimmy G. So I do believe that maintaining the possession of the football is more important, keeping these games close while you're still trying to work through who you are and really trying to work through your own philosophy with a new group of guys. But you do have to have that ability to be able to stretch the ball, or at least have that threat of being able to stretch the ball downfield. And that's just something Jimmy Garoppolo has not been great at over the course of his career. I love this texter. They say, boo this conversation. I don't want either one of them. So you want to go with Geno Smith or Drew Lock? Like, sorry, this is just the position that you're in right now as a franchise. And I'm sorry, but I would take Jimmy Garoppolo or Baker Mayfield over either one of these guys that you currently have on your roster at the moment.
Well, and neither of Geno or Drew Lock have accomplished as much as Baker Mayfield and Jimmy Garoppolo have in their careers. That's indisputable. Now, that's not to say that those guys couldn't get to maybe where Jimmy G and Baker Mayfield are, but Baker and Jimmy have already gotten to those points in their careers. You've seen both of them take teams to the playoffs. I would say Baker Mayfield had a larger influence on his team getting to the playoffs than Garoppolo did either time he was starting a full season. But, I mean, look, the two seasons that Jimmy Garoppolo started at least 15 games, the 49ers made it to at least the NFC Championship game. So with a talented roster around Garoppolo, maybe there is potential for a good season to be had. And Lewis Riddick in that cut sounded pretty optimistic about the Seahawks roster outside of the quarterback position, which I do wonder kind of how the rest of Seattle's roster is viewed nationally. Because, I mean, here we're very close to it, but I wonder because, look, the national media, whether we want to admit it or not, really has nailed the Seahawks offseason in ways that I think a lot of people weren't expecting, especially when it comes to the Russell Wilson trade, where a lot of people locally were very much hesitant to say that Russ is for sure getting traded, whereas Tim Hasselbeck of ESPN was like, oh yeah, this is going down, this is going to happen. We all kind of scoffed at it, when in reality, oh yeah, it did go down, and Tim Hasselbeck may have gotten some inside info on that. So I do wonder, maybe Lewis Riddick is onto something with the Seahawks roster talent, that maybe there is something that we're just not seeing, and maybe this team can surprise if they do have the right guy under center.
Well, this is a very, I would say in this year, it is a very volatile situation. It could be it could either be a extreme positive, and we're looking at how well this team does, that they're pushing for a playoff spot, or maybe they sneak into the playoffs because of the fact that the NFC is down as a whole, and they're able to take advantage of that, or that this is going to be a team that's going to, have a secure top 10 pick this year. I don't see an in-between in that realm whatsoever. I think that this is a team, particularly when you look at their offensive line, you could see how it could be a positive and how there's talent and how they've added talent, but you could also see how this is a group that there's not a sure thing on that offensive line right now. And that's just one example of how this could either come together very nicely or it could work out, you know, very poorly for the team this year as they're continuing to try and build and restock their talent from top to bottom with their roster. All right. Great conversation. We'll get back into it because I think that this is going to be really, really important. And if one of those two guys becomes available, always compete mentality. You can't back off when it comes to the quarterback position if you have a chance to upgrade. All right, let's get to Headline Rewrites brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Right. First up, Steph Curry's historic 43-point performance saved the Warriors from a 3-1 deficit against the Celtics and tied the NBA Finals at two games apiece. What's the real headline?
Real headline, the Warriors, the only team to go from a super team to just Superman. There was one guy who did it all in Game 4, and it was Steph. It was Wardell Stephen Curry, because, boy, what a night he had against the Celtics. Just hitting everything from everywhere. There are athletes that come along once in a generation, maybe even twice in a generation, that not only, you know, perform at a high clip, but also kind of change the game that they play. And Steph Curry, for as much as people want to criticize the Warriors for taking advantage of the super team era and adding Kevin Durant when they did, they would not be anywhere close to that level if it wasn't for the play of Steph Curry, if it wasn't for just how much he has changed basketball, not just from a strategic standpoint, but also throughout the different levels of basketball, youth basketball, AAU, high school basketball, college basketball. We're seeing so many kids now be able to, I would guess, maximize their skill set. Even if they're not able to dunk, even if they're not able to play above the rim, they're still effective if they're able to shoot from beyond the arc.
Yeah, that's a great point that you bring up. I mean, Steph Curry has changed the game, and he is someone that will go down as a legend in NBA history. However, that legend can grow when you have performances like this and you go and win the NBA Finals. This will be a historic moment for Steph Curry's career because the majority of Steph Curry's titles have been with another superstar who was more credited for being the better player, the best player on the team, and that was Kevin Durant. And so this is really Steph Curry's time to shine, I believe, and really truly show that, look, Steph Curry, we all know the greatness, but you add another layer to that greatness when you can show that you can put a team on your back and overcome difficult circumstances to go and win and hoist an NBA Finals trophy. And that's the opportunity that Steph Curry has here. Now, I don't think the Celtics are going to give it to him easy. So this is going to be, so far, we talked about how disappointing the series had been, you know, the first two games. And that quickly has changed now that the series tied at 2-2. I'm excited to see what Steph does next.
Before we get to headline number two, I want to know, Jake, from you, is Steph Curry the most universally liked superstar athlete in American professional sports at the moment? I can't. I mean, I don't know of anybody that actively hates the guy with a burning passion. Maybe Cavs fans feel that way about him, but it just seems like this dude is likable in every aspect. I know everybody that's played for him or played with him remarks that he is one of the best teammates they've ever had, and for someone that's as accomplished as him, that really says a lot.
Well, I would agree with you on this, and he has done a really good job of staying out of trouble. He's done a really good job of you know, keeping himself out of the drama that can unfold between players and all that. I just think that Steph has been likable in his style of play, and then also in how approachable he is, right? I mean, Curtis, doesn't Steph Curry feel type of person that just is approachable, that you could have a conversation with him, you could strike up a conversation with him on the street, and that he would be, you know, totally cool and totally fine, you know, like he wouldn't big time you. That's the vibe that Steph Curry gives off.
Headline Rewrites.
All right. In interviews with Heavy.com, Sports Illustrated, and Field Goals, Chris Carson remains hopeful about his chances of playing football again after suffering a season-ending neck injury in 2021. What's the real headline?
Real headline is this. Well, great to hear the optimism in Chris Carson's voice. The decision is ultimately out of his hands. I mean, he can say that he is gearing up, ready to go, but if he does not pass that physical, and if he does not get clearance from the Seahawks doctors, I don't see any way forward for his playing career to advance.
Yeah, I don't either. And this is why it's becoming increasingly sad to me that the reality of not seeing Chris Carson getting cleared is more likely than not. And, you know, I really am truly doubtful that you see Chris Carson play in 2021. I believe you have a better chance to see him the following year, potentially, after you give it a full year for him to recover from that very, very serious injury. And still, even then, you have no idea how it's going to flare up when he, you know, actually lowers his pads and takes on hits. And you know, with him playing the bruising style that he does, I mean, it's very, very difficult to remain healthy with that type of injury.
Headline rewrites.
Finally, we have for the third straight year, the Tampa Bay Lightning will play for the Stanley Cup after beating the Rangers 4-2. What's the real headline?
Real headline, 1 year into covering the NHL, we're already sick and tired of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Get out of here!
Do something else with your lives other than win Stanley Cups. Ugh.
Look,
find a new slant, Tampa Bay.
That's right. Look, you know, there's certain cities that... Is Tampa Bay becoming the new Boston? Like, what's going on here? This is bizarre.
They're the new Boston with far less obnoxious fans. I'll tell you that. Like, if you root for a Tampa Bay team, I imagine you're a pretty pleasant person because that city is not, like, aggressively annoying and aggressively in your face about how annoying they are, and they wear it as, like, a badge of honor. But boy, yeah, they just win too much down there now, which is hard to say. Like, I would kill anything for the teams here in Seattle to have this run of success that we've seen in Tampa, whether it be the Rays, whether it be the Bucks, and now the Lightning, who have won two straight Stanley Cups, going for a third. Speaking of going for a third straight Stanley Cup, they have a player on their team named Pat Maroon. This would be his fourth straight Stanley Cup ring if they're able to win it here.
Wow.
He won one with the St. Louis Blues a couple of years ago and then has won the last two with Tampa, going for a third. It just feels like, you know, how cool can it be the fourth time around, you know?
Yeah, I mean, seriously, it's got to get boring at that point, you know what I mean? Like, gosh, we're doing this again? All right, it's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com. Coming up next, we got NFL headlines, and we're going to be talking about a receiver who also skipped out of mandatory minicamp that could affect the contract that DK Metcalf can get. That's coming up next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Washington's Terry McLaurin will skip the team's mandatory minicamp, Curtis, as he is seeking out a new deal. Now, Terry McLaurin, not many people will recognize the name as much as they should. This is a guy that has performed extremely well and has over 1,000 yards a season, and yet has played and caught balls from 8 different quarterbacks in his young career. This is one of the game's better young receivers out there, and he is seeking a new deal, Curtis. So you know what that means. This is a new opportunity for a receiver to kind of reset the market or refirm the market. That makes DK Metcalf's negotiating stance much, much stronger.
Yeah, I mean, one of three guys right now. It's McLaurin, it's Deebo Samuel, and it is DK here in Seattle. And Jake, of those three, who do you think ends up with the higher price tag of what they want to sign for?
Honestly, I believe it's going to come down to Deebo Samuel and it's going to come down to DK Metcalf. I think Terry McLaurin is very deserving of a big contract, and I think that he will be in the range. I think it'll be very similar to an AJ Brown-like deal, if not maybe just a little bit more, just because of the amazing production that he has had. I mean, you look at A.J. Brown, and the Tennessee Titans have been a better team, so he's gotten a lot more attention. But Terry McLaurin has been fantastic, absolutely fantastic, for the Washington football team, or the Washington Commanders, whatever they're called these days. And you know, D.K. Metcalf and Deebo Samuel just have more star talent, star potential, and they're more set up, I believe, to have, you know, the bigger careers. Therefore, I think they get the bigger contracts. So I think it really does come down to a game of chicken between DK Metcalf and Deebo Samuel, and which one gets a deal done first with their organization.
Yeah, boy, I wonder if Terry McLaurin is going to have production similar to another really good wide receiver in his day, and that was Brandon Marshall. I mean, they're built totally different. McLaurin is a smaller guy. He's only 6 feet tall. But Brandon Marshall put up huge numbers in his career, and the best quarterback he ever played with regularly. Now, he ended up playing with Russell Wilson for a short stint here in Seattle at the very end of his career. But the best quarterback he ever played with for an extended period of time was, what, Jay Cutler? Like, is Terry McLaurin on pace for a career like that, where the best quarterback he ever plays with is Alex Smith or Ryan Fitzpatrick? I hope not. I hope this is a guy who the NFL world can see the peak of his powers and to see him play with a really good quarterback, because right now he's got Carson Wentz. Like, that does not excite me at all for Washington this upcoming season. But look, McLaurin's, it looks like he's going to produce no matter who is throwing him the football.
Yes, and it's a rare quality to have, right? It's a rare trait to be able to possess, and I think that also speaks to how good of a receiver Terry McLaurin really is. I mean, there's some guys that benefit from having a really good quarterback, or they benefit from having a really strong connection with a particular quarterback, but it always amazes me when you're looking at somebody like DeAndre Hopkins or Andre Johnson for quite some time, who were, you know, making hay with whoever was throwing them the ball, and I think Terry McLaurin fits into that same mold, and you just wish that he was in a better situation. But if Terry McLaurin can't find a deal with Washington, you might end up seeing that happen. And, you know, honestly, I would be happy for him. All right, moving on. Adam Schefter is reporting that the Panthers are hosting free agent Carlos Dunlap on a visit right now. The team is really in need of some help, some pass rushing help, after losing out on Hassan Reddick to free agency. So, Curtis, you see the Panthers, you know, there's some familiarity there in regards to, you know, the GM working for, you know, the Seattle Seahawks and knowing a little bit about Carlos Dunlap. What do you make of that report?
Yeah, Scott Fitterer, who is the GM with the Panthers, longtime assistant of John Schneider here in Seattle. I think it makes a lot of sense for them to go after him. I think, isn't Dunlap sort of, he's from the South. I don't know if he's necessarily from the, yeah, he's from Charleston, South Carolina. So it would make sense that he is looking towards potentially joining the Panthers to finish out his career in front of essentially his hometown fans, not necessarily the same state, but it makes a lot of sense. He's a free agent now after getting that June 1st designation by the Seahawks. So, yeah, I don't think he's got any shot of coming back to Seattle. We had heard a couple months prior to Dunlap's official release on June 1st that there could be a potential for a reunion, but based off of the way the Seahawks went in the draft and also what they did in free agency, bringing in Uchenna Nwosu, it never felt like there was going to be a reunion between Dunlap and the Seahawks. And I think Dunlap last year may have gotten a bad taste in his mouth based on how he was used in the early part of the season, where he did finish with 8.5 sacks on the season, but that was largely in the season's final five or six games of the year.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And so you'll be curious to see how that ends up coming together or how that works out for Carlos Dunlap. But there was also conversation about there maybe being the door open here in Seattle. Now, I don't know if that's effectively closed now that you brought in Boye Mafe. I would have to assume it is. But, you know, I think that Carlos Dunlap still has something to offer for a team, and being able to have the opportunity to play a role that he excels at, which is rushing the passer, doing it from a traditional edge perspective. I think that he still has the potential to be a very, very solid role player for a team out there. All right, Lamar Jackson has reported to the Ravens, to Ravens headquarters for mandatory minicamp. This is a big deal because Lamar Jackson, the Ravens, have not had contract negotiations. Lamar Jackson's entering the last year of his deal. He's also his own agent, Curtis, which makes this a little bit more complicated as well. What is your take on the Lamar Jackson situation? Because I got to tell you, I'm increasingly becoming more uneasy about Lamar Jackson's future as a Baltimore Raven.
I think Lamar Jackson, unless he has another MVP-like season, may have cost himself some serious coin for not negotiating earlier, not negotiating prior to his fifth-year option. Because, look, he's making $23 million this season, which is great money regardless of what you do for a living. But it's not $35 to $40 million, which is what he could have made had he negotiated a little earlier in his career. And I don't know if there's a team out there that is going to be willing to pay him that much money going forward. Now, that's not to say that Jackson is not a talented quarterback. I think nearly every team in the league would still love to have him as their signal caller, but not at a price point that I'm sure he's thinking he's deserved. But look, I hope that he has an MVP-type season, because when he is on, he is one of the most electrifying players the NFL has ever had.
He is. I mean, we're talking around $45 million. I mean, that's the type of deal that you're going to be giving out to Lamar Jackson, and it's going to become increasingly more difficult, I believe, to, you know, get that done. And you know, I think Lamar Jackson, there's also maybe a feeling on his end that maybe the Ravens isn't the right home for him to become the type of player that he ultimately wants to be. So we'll see how that all plays out. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. All right, coming up next, we're going to tell you which Seahawks should we expect to emerge as impact players in 2022.
Live from the Alaska Airlines studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, we're talking about which Seahawks should we expect to emerge as impact players in 2022. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Now, Curtis, when I say that, everybody immediately thinks of the stars. They think of DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Rashad Penny, right? I mean, that's just too easy. But what I'm saying is, what players that are unexpected or unknown names to Seattle fans right now that will emerge as impact players? I think there's a number of candidates that you could throw out there, but I will just get this started off with the name of Shelby Harris. Shelby Harris was involved in the trade for Russell Wilson. This is a guy that can play defensive end, but I believe he'll be more of an inside presence on the defensive line, the interior at defensive tackle. Shelby Harris brings a lot of attitude to the table. He is a guy that is a trash talker. He is somebody that that loves to be able to set the tone for how the game is going to be played, and was one of the players that, you know, truly, genuinely, Denver fans and Denver players were bummed to lose out on when it was a part of the Russell Wilson trade, seeing Shelby Harris have to go. Last year, he had 49 combined total tackles, 6 sacks, 7 tackles for loss, and 11 quarterback hits. If you're getting that type of presence from Shelby Harris on the interior, you're going to be in for a really, really fun production from your defensive line as a whole, because if you can have somebody from the interior that helps set the tone with your pass rush, then that's a very, very positive thing.
I would say Shelby Harris, the most unknown commodity, at least among Seahawks fans, of what the Seahawks got in return for Russell Wilson. Jake, you rattled off the stats of Harris. What is it about him that the Seahawks, when I assume they were given a list of guys from the Broncos saying, here is who we would part with in a trade of Russell Wilson. What do you think they saw in him that made him such a desire of them, or a desire of theirs in return for Russ?
First of all, they had mentioned before that Shelby Harris was someone that was of interest to them as a free agent multiple times that they just never were able to land. But really, from a play perspective, Curtis, it is the ability to be flexible, to be able to rush from the outside and the inside, to be able to do it well. He gets his hands on the football. He is breaking up passes with pass deflects or deflections. He has done that a lot over the course of his career, but I just think that he does a really good job just moving the pocket, pushing the pocket back, Curtis, and can be disruptive in both the pass and the run game. And the last thing that he brings to the table is leadership. This is a guy that is a tone setter. He is a tough guy. He likes to mix it up. He likes to talk a lot. And so I think this really fits into the mold of having somebody that can really contribute at a high level for this team right away in the immediate aftermath of the Russell Wilson trade. All right. Curtis, if you're going to pick a player to emerge as an impact player in 2022, who would that name be for you?
For me, it is going to be somebody else on the defensive side of the ball. And I think this is a guy who, in his career with the Chargers, was overshadowed by some bigger names, Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa and other guys on that defense that did the majority of the pass rushing, whether it be in San Diego or in L.A. But I really am excited to see what Uchenna Nwosu can do in this Seahawks defense as sort of that edge pass rusher, somebody that is going to get after the quarterback. He's 6'2", 251, so you know that he is going to be very athletic as an outside linebacker in this 3-4 scheme. And to me, I think with that opportunity to be a full-fledged starter in this defense, I think he seems like a guy that has just been waiting and waiting and waiting for that opportunity, and now is finally going to get it. And look, the Seahawks gave him a pretty nice contract in terms of years and of money. So with that being said, I would imagine they're going to look for every opportunity to get him out on the field. I'm really excited to see what Nwosu can do this season.
Well, he's younger, he's more explosive, and from that alone, you like this move in moves of the past 4 years where they have really gone after the veteran guys, where, you know, Uchenna Nwosu is very different from that. He's 25 years old, he's going to turn 26, Curtis, and his first opportunity to have a lot more playing time, he made the most of it, and you hope that he can build upon that. And really what Uchenna Nwosu reminds me of, not necessarily style of play is more of like Bruce Irvin. That's the type of role that they kind of hope that he has. But you hope that he can bring like a Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill type of impact to your pass rush. Somebody that is not necessarily a known commodity, but if he can come in here and really build off of the season he had in 21, then, I mean, that would be a great addition to this defensive line, and that's what they're certainly hoping that he can do. That's a really good pick, Curtis. I'm going to come back to you with Ken Walker. Now, Ken Walker being a rookie out of Michigan State, the second round pick, everyone, you know, controversial pick in regards to not dissing the player, but dissing the value of the pick. And I think that's important. Everybody recognizes how good Ken Walker can be. And what talent he possesses. And if Ken Walker can, you know, show up from day one, be able to contribute as a rotational, rusher with Rashad Penny, and then be able to grow into that role of becoming a starter, or grow into that role if anybody was to get injured, I think would be a great development. And I think that you could see Ken Walker very quickly emerge as an impact player for the Seahawks in 2022. He's very similar in terms of the skill set of Rashad Penny, someone who can run between the tackles, who's very sure and confident of himself, but has home run hitting ability, runs a 4.3 40, and can take it the distance at any moment in time. And that would be great to be able to have two home run hitters at the running back position. And Rashad Penny and Ken Walker almost seems too good to be true.
The Seahawks are going to rely heavily upon Walker this season. I think this is a guy who could be one of the better running backs in the NFC West. I think he could be one of the better running backs in the NFC. I hate to say it, but I'm not sold on Rashad Penny playing all 16 or all 17 games. How many games do they play these days? They play 17 games.
17,
now.
Yeah.
I think he's going to miss, you know, a game here or there, just as he always has done in his career. We talked about it last week. He's only played in about half the games that he's been eligible for in his NFL career. So there are going to be plenty of opportunities for Walker to take advantage of. And look, would I be surprised if by the end of the season, Walker is running back number one on this team? No, I'm not going to be surprised by it at all, because that's just how volatile that position is. It's like relief pitchers in baseball. You ride the hot hand. You ride the guy that is carrying the ball for you and being productive. That was Penny to end the season. But who knows what it's going to be like mid part of this season, end of this season. It could be Ken Walker.
That's a great point. All right, that was some of our Seahawks that we feel like could emerge as impact players in 2022. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the other two names that we believe, the other two Seahawks that still have a lot of work to do before training camp. That's coming your way next.